good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Blum, and I am your host of A Pen and a Napkin Podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 274, and we have on the other end of the line, multitasking with young children, Skittles, and some Scottish ball striking is Mr. Jared Blackwell, the head girls basketball coach at Sandy Creek High School here in Nebraska. Before we get to Coach Blackwell, of course, we need to recognize our founding sponsor, Cosec Chiropractic, located at 144th and Eagle Run Drive here, or 144th and Maple on Eagle Run Drive here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or our athletes are struggling with balance, neck, or spinal issues, have them go see Cosec Chiropractic. Actually, with their Monday this week, I've been having some issues with my neck because I'm seasoned and experienced. Dr. Kevin, in about 5 minutes, had me feeling a lot better than I did coming in there. So go check them out, 402-964-0300. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, Spotify, iTunes, doesn't matter. Download, rate, review, subscribe, give us 5 stars so that we gain momentum, move up in the rankings, so that people, when they're looking up coaching basketball podcasts, they find a pen and a napkin very quickly. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Enough of that stuff. Coach Blackwell, you are on the putting green. You've got the kids. You've got some golfers out there working on their game, and you decide to throw a podcast in the middle of it. Is there anything else you'd like to multitask with right now?
You know, no, I don't think so. I think I got enough irons in the fire right now. Why not just, brighten my day, being able to talk some hoops with a great individual like Coach Plum yourself.
Well, thank you very much. Are those irons in the fire, are they pitching wedges or 9 irons? Golf joke. So
that's fair. That's fair. No, I enjoy a good golf joke. With me being a dad, you know, you can never get too bored with a good dad joke.
Yes, exactly. And everybody that just heard that joke, if you've thrown up a little bit in your mouth, I get it. I understand. I totally understand. So. Coach Blackwell, it's been great to get to know you the last couple of years, 2-3 years or so here, and really excited to have you on for your first solo podcast here. Let's dive into it. Let's go right into it. For folks that don't know a lot about Jared Blackwell and his basketball journey, tell us all about it and how you ended up being the girls basketball coach at Sandy Creek.
Yeah, for sure. So I was born and raised in Fairbury, Nebraska. I distinctly remember when I was a young kid, it would have been Coach Phil Sievers, had a couple of, good Fairbury boys basketball teams that he took down to Lincoln himself that, my family was good friends with, them. So, you know, we went down there, watched the boys. And then, when I was in high school, you know, I had the privilege of playing under, Coach Rick Bell, who is currently at Aurora now. Mm-hmm. Played 4 years there, and I actually got a golf scholarship at Hastings College, and I played for 4 years there. Right out of college, my first teaching gig was Sandy Creek, where I was a boys assistant for 10 years. And then after my 10th year, the head boys basketball coach, who was the AD, and that's Matt Swarson Druber, said that the girls' position was going to be open, and he said, "I would like you to do it." And I said, "I know nothing about that side of the ball, but I'd be willing to give it a good try." So that's how I ended up at Sandy Creek. Mm-hmm. But you know, it's been a journey. Have definitely asked a lot of questions for veterans and anybody who would be willing to talk hoops with me from definitely a young age. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
When the newest category to our podcast here, the Karen Self, a pen and a napkin moment. Coach, when was the first time that you really remember starting to draw it out, to get out a pencil and paper or a pen and a napkin or whatever it may be, and start taking a look at those X's and O's and kind of getting that coaching mind in place.
Oh, I had a great group of friends when I was in high school, even in middle school. We played basketball from the time that we were fourth grade all the way basically until we were seniors. So we were very tight. I remember in middle school would be the first time that we actually started drawing on a posy board. You know, we would go into our coach's classroom, and we're on a bus or right before like a B game or a C game, you know, and we'd just be drawing it and be like, hey, what do you guys think of this? Or what do you think of this? You know? And then usually we always had that reality check from our head coach when he was like, it's probably not going to work, guys. like young, naive kids just saying like, oh, this is going to work like every time. But, you know, it was middle school, and then going on just a little bit, I can remember when I was a senior in high school, there was 2 third grade classes where they didn't have any parents that wanted to take their kids to any tournaments. Mm-hmm. And me and one of my fellow teammates, he took one group and I took another group, and we actually dabbled into coaching our very first time when we were a senior in high school, coaching third grade basketball in a tournament with like three to five games. So, mm-hmm. So that definitely an out of body experience when you're fresh out of playing, and then all of a sudden people want you to coach and you're just like, I haven't ever seen this side of the ball. So it was definitely something new, but I would say that was the very first time that those were some of the very first memories of my basketball career.
Yeah. Just that kind of kicking up that passion for yourself. So,
yep, for sure.
You are the head coach of what is historically one of the more storied programs in the state of Nebraska. And a lot of that is due to a variety of different people, but the guy that was at the helm of it was, of course, Coach Neinmeyer, a mutual friend of ours. And, not only do you know that, but you went to school there. And so I'm sure you saw a lot of that success play itself out as you grew up in the Sandy Creek school district. And there's, I would imagine, definitely a certain expectation for the girls basketball program there. Coach Neinmeyer won, was it 10 or 11?
It was 10.
10 state championships. 10. And
the joke was when he won his 10th championship, he was no longer Coach Neinmeyer. He was Coach Tenmeyer.
Oh, wow. Nice. The second play on words in 10 minutes here as everyone throws up in their mouth a little bit more here. So
that's fair. That's fair.
But not only all the state championships, but, Russ is the state's all-time leader in wins, with the vast majority of those wins coming at Sandy Creek. What's it been like for you stepping into those awful big shoes to fill that Russ left behind? And I know there's been some distance between Russ moving on from Sandy Creek and you taking over, Jared, but what's that experience been like?
I gotta say, it's exciting. Mm-hmm. Every time that you go to practice, every time that you coach a game at Sandy Creek, you seal that rich history, and it could be on the boys' side of things. Definitely it's known on the girls' side for girls basketball, but man, you look at the shoes that you have to fill staring at those 10 state championships and multiple, district titles and conference titles just staring right at you every time that you're in that coaching box. And, for me, it's just exciting. What he did for girls basketball in the state of Nebraska. And then just, you know, every coach's dream is to win one, and he did it 10 times. You know, you just hope that you don't let anybody down. Mm-hmm. But the way that you do that is you make sure that the girls work hard. They compete every single possession. And, you know, Coach Neinmeyer and I had several conversations, and he was just like, teaching them to play the Cougar way is more important than the wins and the losses.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Has it, you know, how many, you know, is it, how nice is it to know that, hey, if I'm struggling with something, you can give a guy like that a call?
It is a big relief off of your shoulders. Let me tell you what, one of probably the best pieces of advice that guy ever gave me was he just came off of, I think, his 10th state championship. I'm on the boys' side of things, and I'm just struggling, you know, because the JV boys aren't listening to what I have to say. And he said, Coach, how many wins and losses do I have? And I was young, I was naive, and I was just like, 9. You just came off of your 10th state title. You know, you have like 300 plus wins. I was like, that's how many wins you have. I have zero idea how many losses you have. And he's like, none.
Mm-hmm.
I have no wins and I have no losses. And like, my young, inexperienced self was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, I'm not putting the buckets, or I'm not putting the ball through the hoop. I'm not playing defense. All I'm doing is facilitating that the girls are going up and down the floor, running the correct plays, putting them in the correct positions. And when he told me that, I was just like, wow, that is incredible, knowing that a guy like that, who's been at the highest of highs,
mm-hmm.
saying that he basically has never won nor lost any game that he's ever coached.
Yeah.
So, being able to call him and be like, hey, what do you think about this? This is what I'm doing. And, you know, sometimes he's brutally honest and says it's never going to work. And other times he's like, you might have to draw that up for me so I can run it at my plate, you know? So it's very justifying, exciting that, you know, no matter how far away he is, he's always a phone call away.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk real quick about some influences in your coaching world there, Jared. Yep. You had mentioned Matt Schwarzendruber, who you had worked with for a long time on the boys' side of things. You know, what about him has been really influential for you?
Honestly, Matt's like an older brother to me right now, honestly. I mean, he's kind of in the same boat as Coach Neinmeyer. I'll say that guy, I have seen him get so mad at some of his players and so frustrated, and then turn right around and he can just pat somebody on the butt and pick them up, you know, after being just absolutely furious with them. So it's definitely nice to see that he can chew somebody out, but then that's exactly what they needed to get their head in the correct mindset. So, you know, knowing that if I get on a player, like, I then, after I get on them, you know, I need to make sure that I have a relationship with them and I build that relationship back, especially after I, you know, might tear it down, because they're not meeting expectations or the way that we want to play.
Mm-hmm.
Other sayings that, you know, he's kind of taught me is like, you have to be very quick, sort of in a timeout. Like, you can spend 40 seconds, in a minute timeout, chewing somebody's butt, because that doesn't work well. You kinda call a timeout, regain your thoughts. And my first year at the helm, there was a couple of times where the officials came into our huddle and was like, "Hey, get them out.
We need to continue the game here, coach."
Right. So, I mean, Matt's kind of helped me in that regard, you know, just watching him when he was on the boys' side of things, to how he facilitated a timeout was awesome. And then, in fact, I know that a lot of my practice plans, I actually, everything that I have, I'm going to be honest, none of it's come from my brain. Everything is pretty much all stolen. So it's been from UConn. It's been from the boys' side of things. It's been from the girls' side of things. So
mm-hmm.
it's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? So
mm-hmm.
yeah, he's been a big part. And for him to take me under his wing when I was a young pup right out of college was a true blessing.
Yeah. Well, we're all either replicators or innovators, and you know, you got to do what you got to do. Though you mentioned UConn and Coach Ariema, what have you taken from him?
Honestly, like he just some of his 2-minute press conferences. You know, like I'm a YouTube nerd. I'll watch motivational speeches and everything like that from him. He mentioned something about body language one time, and he said that one of his best players in one of the games just had really poor body language, and he pulled him. And the press conference continues, and it says, "Well, you were able to pull her because you had like 4 or 5 other really good players on your team." And he was like, "Yeah, I know that. But because her body language was bad, she didn't play." So, in fact, my first year coaching, I had a player who had an opportunity. She had a wide open layup, you know, just made a steal and misses the layup. And, you know, she was excited because, you know, "I'm going to score on this possession," and she misses the layup. And she starts crying on the court. and like, I'm looking at her, I'm like, "You're going to get another one, right?" Like, trying to build up her confidence and everything. Well, sure enough, 2 possessions later, she gets another one. Again, misses the layup, and is just crushed. You know, like, just feels like she let everybody down. And I pulled her. She was a starter. She had been starting since she was a sophomore. And I pulled her, and I was just like, "We need to fix this. Like, you need to figure it out." And that was something that I pulled from Gino. Mm-hmm. And it was just finally in the third quarter, you know, she set all of the second. She set in halftime, and I ripped her butt at halftime, and I was just like, "You are a good player. Like, don't let just little things tear you down." And then finally, halfway through the third quarter, I looked at her, and I was like, "Are you ready to play?" And she, like, shoulders are still slumped, you know, and she kind of slightly nods. And I was like, "Well, you got the rest of this quarter to figure it out." And then she played in the fourth quarter and did really good things. But that's one thing in our program: if you have bad body language, you're gonna find the seat right next to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about Kara Lawson?
Kind of the same. You know, when she took over Duke wasn't in an amazing spot on the women's side of things, especially with the boys always having so much success. And one of her quotes is, you know, life doesn't get any easier. It's only going to get harder, you know? So teaching sophomores, juniors, and seniors that, you know, if I get through 2 days, you know, then the next practice is going to be easy. Well, then you got all your game prep. So then, you know, scouting reports happen, games fly by, you know, so just being able to handle hard situations when they come, because life isn't easy. Yeah. So being able to handle that. And I mean, those are just big helpful things for me, because, you know, it makes you self look at yourself or look inside and be like, well, are you doing the correct things? Are you making your teammates or your players better? So that's a big thing that I've taken from her. And, you know, it's just, you know, some of the things that they're telling D1 players is something that we should be telling, you know, high school athletes as well.
Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp, it's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. Coach, you are fairly new to the role. We'll kind of get through the last couple of years and everything that has happened. But 'tis the season where coaches are taking new jobs, stepping away. There's transitions, and of course, you have assistant coaches that have never been head coaches before that are going to be taking over head coaching positions. As somebody who is fairly fresh off of that situation, but you've got enough, you know, reps under your belt after 4 years, you've got a pretty good idea of what being a head coach all encompasses here. What advice would you give to those assistant coaches that are taking over as a head coach for the first time?
Well, I'm still really bad at this. So when you say new assist or new head coaches, I don't delegate power very well. Like I'm getting better at it, but my first couple of years, I wanted to run every drill. I wanted to make sure that the girls were doing it the way that I wanted it being done. You know, so it was just, I wanted to be in control. And for me to let go of power sometimes I feel like I'm letting go of the reins just a little bit, if that makes any sense at all.
No, absolutely it does. I mean, that's something that I struggled with, and a lot of coaches struggle with, is that what I call delegation of authority, you know, allowing your assistant coaches to do their jobs. Absolutely.
Right. So, I mean, I am terrible at communication. So I am thankful. I have a great staff right now. This will actually be this next year will be our third year together. But she is a church secretary. And she came to me when she wanted to help out. She was just like, you are going to give me everything that I need to type up for the week to let parents know. And I'm not taking no as an answer. And I was just like, you want to handle all the communication side of things? Please, please do so. Like, that will be awesome. So, I mean, that was the first time, that I could say like, ooh, I let something go. And the crazy thing is what a relief it was, you know, like, now there's one thing off of my plate that I don't have to worry about. And so for those new head coaches, make sure you have a staff that you've picked and you can trust, and one that is willing to help you, you know, and do what needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
So that was something that definitely was a weight off of your shoulders.
Mm-hmm. What obviously it helps to have good players. I mean, that's the key to most of our success, but you've made good strides every single year, Jared, you know, in 4 years, you know, 4-19 to 5-18 to 9-18. And then this last year you got above 500, 14-10. What do you feel like you've done well over those 4 years to take the program again from a place where it wasn't exactly where you wanted it to be, to where things are moving in the right direction?
True. Yeah. Now, before I took over the program, I think the previous years they were 2-20 and 1-21. And you know, I heard a lot of noise before I took it over, like, why are you thinking about doing this? I just wanted to roll up my sleeves and get to work and hopefully, teach the game of basketball. But a big thing that I did is I'm not afraid to ask questions or find people who have better answers than what I do. So I've worked the Breakthrough basketball camp at Sandy Creek for the last 5-6 years. And one of the guys who was the lead instructor was a guy by the name of Coach Jim Huber.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So right before my first year of head coaching, I was like, God, Jim, Coach Jim, what do I got to do? Like, do I try and keep us in a ball game for a half and then, you know, whatever happens there, you know? And he told me, he was like, you got to start small. You got to start picking small victories,
yeah,
you know? And I was like, what are you talking about? And he was just like, win rebounds. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you might not win both offensively and defensively, but try winning the rebounds, you know? And I was just like, okay, what else? you know? And then throughout the year, that first year, I just kept asking questions. I was like, okay, you know, we won rebounds this game. What should we do now? He was like, go and try and win a quarter, you know? So then we were trying to win a quarter. You know, so the big thing is my first 2 years, I don't think I ever looked at the home and visitor scores. I had my student managers keeping track of turnovers. I had keeping track of rebounds. I had us keeping track of, are we actually shooting the ball more than our opponents? You know, just trying to figure out any small wins that we possibly could. And, you know, that second year we were able to get another win, which was, you know, a big step in the right direction. And then my third year, we had a great group of seniors, and our sub-district was just favorable in sub-district. And then we went and played the juggernaut of Pender, at Pender. And then this year, you know, we just had just one domino fell, you know, and things got a little bit easier, and then another domino. And then we played a tight game against Tri-County this year, and our girls figured out how to win a ball game, you know, being in a tight game the whole game. And then we went to Holdridge, and kind of the same thing. We kept just trying to figure out ways to win.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of something that stuck with me, and that's what we've been working towards.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's that you were talking about the small victories. You know, when I took over my previous job, you know, they had struggled, and it was just, I literally remember the only thing we talked about from the first game to the second game, and we got destroyed in both games. You know, the scoreboard said we got destroyed, but I was like, look at our shot quality from game one to game two. That's literally the only thing we talked about. And if you continue to do that, if we quit turning the ball over and taking good shots, we are going to start winning games. But that's the only thing that we addressed. That's the only thing that we really looked at. And those are the small steps that you have to take when you're rebuilding something.
I mean, I think the year before I took over to the year that I took over, our point total, like our average points per game, increased by 10 points per game, and our turnover margin decreased by almost like 12 points of games, you know, just from year negative one to year one, from me coaching. And, you know, I like every time I just, we kept addressing those things like, hey, this is what we did. This is why we're doing it in practice. This is why we're going to keep doing it, so we can continue to grow and develop as that program.
Yep. Speaking of growing and developing, this is a question I'm going to have for every guest until we get to probably Memorial Day or so. Jared, what's your plan? What do you want to get better at as a coach before your summer season starts?
Well, currently I have a three-ring binder that's just busting at the seams. You know, I think I have plays from my first year and scouting reports from my first year all the way up until now. That one, I'd probably like to organize that a little bit better. But the other thing is, I had to take a big, long, good look in the mirror this off season when my athletic director and I had a sit down meeting, and he was just like, you know, you're very passionate about the game, and I know that you care about, you know, your wins and your losses, but every time that you lose a game, you can't take it that it is your fault. And, you know, when he said that, I was just like, out, you know, like, 100% true. Like, yeah. I've always told the girls, you know, like, we're going to put you in correct positions, you know. And for me, when we lost a game, I just always took it really personal, because I felt like I either A, got out coached, or B, I didn't put the girls in the correct positions for us to be successful.
You had failed them.
Yeah. And I failed them. So a big thing that I need to work on is, you know, making sure that I continue to get better myself. and just making sure that if a loss happens, you know, go back, watch the film, take notes of what we could have done better, or could we have done anything better? So that's one big thing that I definitely need to work on this summer, moving on into next year.
Well, oftentimes your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. And yeah, I mean, you take it, you want to prepare, you want to do that, but you know, there is that art of, okay, I've got to let it go. I've got to move on to the next one, regardless whether or not, you know, no matter if we win or lose, we still got to play Donovan Trumbull on Friday night, and I got to let it go and I got to move on from it.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Folks, we had a great day on April the 12th at the 5th annual A Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. And if you couldn't be there, that stinks. But what's fortunate for you is we taped everything that we did. So if you are interested in ordering any of our clinic videos or all of our clinic videos from our great presenters on April the 12th, it's there for you. All you have to do is DM me on Twitter at @apenandanapkin. Email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. We've got Andy King talking about 5-on-5 transition and controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer from Iowa State University on player development. We've got Lucas Dollinghouse on coaching through an administrator's eyes. Wade Coulter talking about pressure defense and extending your pressure defense. Raz Vanderloo with a basketball smorgasbord of stuff from Sioux City East High School, USA Basketball, and Jamie Smith from Solon High School, talking about shooting and shooting technique, shooting fundamentals. It's a great lineup, great coaches, great presentations. They're there for you. $10 a piece is all the videos cost. If you want to get all six of them, I'll bundle it together for you. $50 for all six videos. So coaches, if you weren't there, too bad. But because we're thinking ahead here, we've got the videos available for you. Give me a shout out. Let me know if you want to order any or all of the 5th annual A Pen and a Napkin Spring Clinic Coaches Presentations. Coach, let's jump into some John Wooden here. You ready for that?
Yep, I think so.
All right. We are going to have the John Wooden quote of the day. How are the kids doing, by the way? Are they still all right?
Actually, my daughter has peeked her head out of the clubhouse door a couple of times, said my name, I've waved, and then she went right back into watching TV.
Easy enough.
Yeah. And then I think my son is with my assistant coach. He loves riding on the golf cart. So he's just making sure that all the kids are doing what they need to be doing.
Perfect. All right. Well, I just want to make sure that the Blackwell family and the Sandy Creek golf team is in a good place here. So that's
yep. So we're good.
All right. Well, here we go, Coach. We're going to do the John Wooden quote of the day from Wooden: A Lifetime of Observations, from page 81. Are you ready, sir, for the John Wooden quote of the day?
I think so.
Here it is. Again, page 81, Wooden: A Lifetime of Observations. The Wooden quote of the day is: what was under my control was how I prepared myself and our team. I judged my success, my winning, on that. It just made more sense. I felt if we prepared fully, we would do just fine. If we won, great. Frosting on the cake. But at no time did I consider winning to be the cake. And I swear, Jared, before our last topic there, I literally typed this up yesterday, so I had no idea that was going to come about here. But your yeah. Thoughts on the wooden quote?
Oh, I mean we kind of touched on it a little bit. I mean, yes, winning. Every coach kind of job depends on that win loss column. As painful as that is to say, but. You know, luckily I have a great, great community behind me that they've seen a lot of the hard work that I put in scouting. And when I'm trying to put the girls in the correct positions, on the basketball floor, you know, being able to see what other coaches are doing, calling, you know, and I'm able to tell what's coming, So I mean, yes, winning is great. I mean, who doesn't like to win? But the big thing is for me is making sure that the girls are prepared. We're doing everything in our power, you know, that if you have a shooter on your team and she's struggling, how can you tap her mindset to get her to, you know that the next shot's going to be the most important. So prepping them and getting them to buy in is a huge part. And, you know, what the saying is, it's not X's and O's, it's the Jimmies and the Joes type of thing. And you know, when we started out, we had neither. So getting them prepared, you know, like, hey, we have to do this drill to get ourselves better. And then once we do this enough, you know, wins might happen. And now after, you know, 4 years, we can say not when wins happen, but they're going to happen. So those are kind of things that I think about as well.
Yeah. Well, let's get into your philosophy here, Jared. Let's talk about some things that you do there, some of the stuff that you've implemented there with the Cougars of Sandy Creek. And let's just, you know, dive right into some of your favorite practice drills. You sent some of them to me here on the survey that I send out for folks. I call them desert island drills. You know, if I had to run my practice here, if this is the only thing that we can do here, what are going to be my 4, 5, 6 favorite drills that I want to continually run? So talk to us, Coach, about your favorite drills and what you like to run in practice.
Start, and I kind of stole this from Layson Brown a little bit, but during our holiday tournament, when it was Fort Calhoun, it was Howell's Dodge, and it was Centura and Sandy Creek, you know, I would sit down with you guys and I would try and pick your brains. And Layson told me, you know, as soon as they get to the gym, every single day when they get to the gym, they're form shooting or they're shooting shots, 100 shots, you know, right before practice even starts. And I implemented that myself. So, you know, before my girls even start sweating or going to our ball handling stuff, my big thing is they're getting their shoes laced up, their jerseys on, and they're getting into the gym and they're making, you know, at least 100 shots before, if not more, before my whistle blows and we're ready to go. And that's a big thing that we will always start with no matter where I go. Mm-hmm. The next drill, I call them DBTs. My girls, Sometimes it's easier to get them to start in on them than others, but DBTs just simply stands for decision-based training. And we will start one-on-one, and then it's two-on-two, and then three-on-three. But, you know, we start almost every practice with DBTs just because I feel in my philosophy that kids nowadays don't go out into the driveway or into the street or into the playground and just play one-on-one and two-on-two. We live in a society right now where it's got to be, let's play five-on-five. Let's take them to as many tournaments as we possibly can. Let's see how many medals and trophies we can win by the time that they're in middle school. And I've kind of taken more of the approach of, I want to see what you're going to do one-on-one when, you know, somebody's right in your face, or if somebody helps off in two-on-two, what are you going to do with that ball? Yeah. So, I mean, those are some of my favorite ones because when I first started, you know, I told the girls, I was like, hey, I want you to do a rocker step here. And they looked at me and they're like, what's a rocker step? So we actually did a lot of one-on-one drills. So I was like, But what I know isn't realistic in a game. So this DBT series that I do, I just think it's absolutely phenomenal, because then when we do get to 5-on-5, you know, the spacing is a little bit than it is on 3-on-3, but it's amazing how kids, when you give them a little bit of freedom in that, can start moving without the ball, cutting, and then seeing passing angles and reading the defense and their feet. Then another, we'll move on.
I wanted to say real quick, you were talking about the one-on-one, you know, we really made a conscientious effort, you know, 5 to 10 minutes every day. We wanted to go one-on-one. We wanted to work on guarding the ball one-on-one so we could stay one-on-one and not be forced into rotation. But also, you know, especially the farther you get into the season, the scouting increases and everybody knows what you're doing. You got to have kids that make plays. So the only way they learn how to make plays is by getting those reps and trying to figure it out and trying to figure out how to score one-on-one. So I love that part of it, Coach.
No, I agree. Hi. Okay. All right. Hey, can you go back inside? All right. See ya. Moving on, you know, after we do some of those DBTs, we kind of go into let's get you kind of a warm sweat going on. So, 11 man break, you know, some weave, some KU passing and everything like that. But then, you know, we spend a lot of time shooting the ball. I've done a lot of different drills, but you know, some of my favorite ones are UConn twos or 25 and two is what I call them. Putting time up on the clock and then giving them an idea. And then we chart every single one of those. Every time that we do UConn twos or any time that we do 25 and two, my assistants, who I've delegated yet again to another job, they chart it. So the girls know where they were previously. And then they're always trying to beat everyone in the gym, but then they're also trying to beat their previous record as well.
Along with that, Coach, I know, you know, obviously you talked about shooting form. You talked about what Latheon told you about the 100 shots. What are some of your favorite shooting drills that you like to run?
UConn twos and threes, we put 4 minutes up on the clock. There's a line of girls on the two baselines, and then a line of girls at either in between the knee and elbow. So we have all of our girls on our entire team lined up in those, four locations. And for the first 3 minutes, they're shooting nothing but 2-point shots.
Mm-hmm.
A big thing is they shoot it, they have to get their rebound. And then that next shooter, if they're not communicating, you know, like, hey, I'm at the elbow. I've told my players, you're not throwing them the ball. And then in the last 3 minutes, they go back to the 3-point line. For the last minute, they go to the 3-point line and they're shooting nothing but threes. And then we put on the visitor's side of the scoreboard the goal that we have in our mind, mm-hmm. for that day. And then in the home score, we put what our girls get.
Mm-hmm.
So this last year in 4 minutes, we had a goal later on in the season at like 161. It kind of sounds steep to some, and others would probably laugh at it. But, you know, our girls work very hard at, no matter what the girl is or whatever the goal is, to beat it or to meet it. So, mm-hmm. That's the first one. 25-2, same concept. Put 2 minutes up on the clock. There's five spots on the floor: baseline, wing, top of the key, other wing, baseline. And I got one shooter and two rebounders. And as soon as the whistle blows, that girl who's shooting is shooting for all 2 minutes. And her goal is to make five shots in every one of those five locations before that 2 minute clock has run down. So, and then if they beat the time, I tell them to keep shooting to see how many more shots that they can get up until that time goes off. And this last year, my 3-point shooter, who's going to play at the next level, I think her best was, she made 25 and I think a minute and 15 seconds. So she still had 40, she still had 45 seconds left. So she got then, she said, I got 25 in a minute and 15. And then we always say, well, how many more did you get? And I think she was at plus 22.
Wow.
So, I mean, when she was on, but, you know, she always loved that drill because she was like, not only can I compete against the girls at my basket, but I'm always continuing getting better at for myself.
Yep.
Trying to beat that next one. Mm-hmm. So, those are two. And then just this year.
Folks, if you are looking for a good book, guess what? I have got something for you. Kings of Their Court, Three Teams, One City, and the Greatest Basketball Season in Nebraska High School History is available today on Amazon.com. It is the story of Tim Cannon at Millard North, Josh Ludke at Creighton Prep, and Doug Woodard at Bellevue West, and the three teams that they had during the 2021 season, the chaos that everybody was living through. The story literally picks up with the outbreak of COVID in March of 2020, and it carries through for the next 365 days. Everything that these players, these parents, these coaches that they went through, from COVID quarantines to George Floyd to the politics of the time to just trying to get the season in a somewhat normal fashion with these three teams from this one city that were ranked in the top 25 in the country. Now, think about that. That would be hard to do in a New York and a Los Angeles. We had that here in Omaha, Nebraska. It is a terrific, terrific book. Of course, I'm a little biased because I'm the one that wrote it, but I think that if you're a basketball person or if you like a good sports story, a very amateurish version of Friday Night Lights for basketball, this is the type of story that you're really, really going to enjoy. So go to Amazon.com, go to books, type in Kings of Their Court, and it's going to take you right there to it. It's $19.99 for the paperback, $9.99 for the Kindle version. Folks, check it out. I think it's a really, really great story, and I don't think you're going to regret picking up a copy of Kings of Their Court.
Coach Baronic at Kearney Catholic implemented that, or not Kearney Catholic, Kearney High. Implemented that any shooting challenge, and our girls wanted to take part in that. So every week he sent out a new shooting challenge, and the girls were very excited because I'm very stuck in my ways. So any chance that they were able to do a new shooting drill, you know, they were very excited because, hey, this isn't the same one we've done for the last however long.
Yep.
So it was good to be a part of that, and it was always good to see other scores, and the girls were always getting online and seeing where they stacked up against other girls in the state.
Mm-hmm. I'm very curious here, Jaron. You said a couple of things that you picked out. You said scouting, and then you followed that with, I might be crazy. So I'm a little interested, slightly paranoid as to what may come out of this, but let's talk a little scouting here. And I have no idea what you meant by the phrase, I might be crazy, but I'm curious enough to ask.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I would like to say, when I say that I'm prepared going into a basketball game, I don't really take that lightly. The next game always is the most important one, but that game is the most important one. So, if we have a Friday, Saturday doubleheader, and my coaches are like, oh, we need to rep stuff that's going to happen on Saturday. And I was like, guys, that doesn't matter. The game on Friday matters, right? So, like, it's nothing for me after a Friday night to stay up literally all Friday and prep for Saturday. So, like, scouting-wise, I'm getting your last six game films, whether it's from the previous season or, you know, like, we opened up with Wood River this year, and I was getting game film from literally their last six games the previous year. And I know that their whole demographic changed because they graduated players. But, you know, I am making sure that if I see a hand signal, if I see, you know, them patting their head, if they are if they're calling a call, I want to make sure I know it. And I have player breakdowns. I have half court free throw lanes drawn up. Yes, bud. Not right now. and then I have full court stuff drawn up too. So, like, my scouting report, I would like to say I'm very thorough. I know which way a girl's gonna go, because I've watched the film. I know what shoulder she's gonna turn over in a post. Tendencies are big for me. And then the part where I said that I might be crazy is in the second half with the new huddle cameras usually across the way, I will watch the bench try and see if I can, if they're holding up number one for baseline out of bounds play, to try and draw it up. And I'm going to try and make sure that I know what's coming so I can put the girls in the correct spots.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think you're crazy. I think you're thorough, without a doubt, but you know, we share some tendencies there. It's okay. How do you, the great question to ask all coaches when it comes to this type of stuff, how do you narrow it down so your kids understand it and it's not, you know, paralysis by analysis?
Right. So, I mean, I'm very old school when it comes to pen and paper when I'm watching films, you know, so I'll have like number 15 or number 5, right? And I'll have all of these notes. And then as right before I'm writing it up for the girls, I'll make sure that, hey, this one for sure is right-handed. We're going to force her left, you know, so like, I might have way more notes on my scouting report than what I give theirs, but I am trying to be blunt and to the point for the girls, just so they're not having to think of all of my paragraphs that I have on my end of things. So, you know, I'll break it down to, oh, she's a right-handed shooter or she's a left-handed shooter. You know, this one will shoot threes, this one won't. And here's your point guard. And then with huddle assist, you know, it's really good. Like, we played a team who one girl averaged or was like 150 shots more than anybody else on the team. And I was like, hey, we're going to try and limit this person's touches. Mm-hmm. So, Those are really good things. And then you got coaches who may not use max preps or the stats features, you know. So that's where Huddle Assist comes, where you can throw them a game and they can say that this person shot the ball, 30 some times this game, and she was at the free throw line this many times. Well, hey, ladies, we don't want her to drive to the basket. So, I want them to be knowledgeable of the players, but I also want them to also be able to just go out and play basketball and not have to think about every little detail on that scouting reports.
How about superstitions? Again, the quote, "I might be crazy. I might be crazy." Let's go home on this here, Jared. What do you mean by this?
Well, so very, I wouldn't say that I was superstitious in high school, but ever since I started coaching, I would say that I don't know if I'm crazy or if it's gross, but if we win a ball game, I'm wearing the exact same outfit the next time that we play. So it's going to be the exact same quarter zip. It's going to be the exact same shirt. It's going to be the exact same tie. Now, hold on before you say gross. I do wear an undershirt underneath of my shirt and tie. So even though I might not be 10 miles with the big old pit stains underneath of my button up, but my undershirt will change. But I have a pair of shoes that I wear pretty much every basketball game. Same dress pants, same type of belt, so I'm wearing the exact same outfit if we win in that ball game. And then from if we lose, I'm gonna change it completely up. I'm not wearing the same color pants. I'm not wearing the same color of shirt. However, my tie selection is very minimal. So ties might look the same, but different quarter zip, but yeah, I have plenty of outfits. But yeah, very superstitious on what I'm wearing for game days, especially after we've won. The other thing is, and the girls think I'm kind of crazy on this too, is I am so focused on game days. I can't eat. I don't know if that is nerves or what, but from the moment that I wake up until after the conclusion of the game, I can't eat. I think every coach loses X amount of weight throughout the season. I think I put a true outlier on these things for that reason as well.
Well, I've been putting on the weight in the last year or so, so I don't have that problem. But I've also never struggled with not eating on game day either. But that's, we all got our things. We all got our things. So.
I also have a specific spot on our bus that I always sit on. I always sit on the exact same side for every one of our road games. It doesn't matter where we're going. So, yeah, I call me. You can call me crazy or very superstitious, but those things for me are always the exact same.
Are you like Michael Scott? I'm not superstitious. I'm just kind of stitious, that type of thing. But no, Rick Majerus was the same way. Once he got on a winning streak, he would wear the same outfit over and when I think it was 98, they made the run to the title game, and he wore like the same outfit for they were on like a 14 game winning streak, and he wore the same thing for 14 games in a row or whatever it was. So you're in good company there, Jared, if you're talking to Rick Majerus. So
okay, all right.
good.
Yeah. So, great stuff, Jared. If folks want to know more about you, want to know more about your program, how can they find out?
Oh, I'm very, one way. You can reach me on my school email. That's about it. I don't have X or Twitter or anything like that, but you shoot me an email. I am very good about answering it, and I can definitely answer any questions that they may have.
All right. What's your school email, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, it's jared.blackwell@sandycreek.us.
All right. Very nice. So great stuff. And the golf team is okay. The kids are okay. We've survived all of that, right?
Well, my son wants to go home. My daughter's chasing a different kid that just showed up. And I don't technically see my second group of golfers, but we'll eventually go and find them here shortly.
It's a big space. You'll find them. You'll find them. You're okay. Yep. So, well, Coach, I hope you enjoyed your first solo trip here on a pen and a napkin.
Yeah, no, it was great. I appreciate you wanting to have me.
Yeah, well, it's a great conversation. Enjoyed it here. If you can hold the line a second, we got to wrap up a couple of things. So, again, Jared Blackwell, girls basketball coach at Sandy Creek High School here in Nebraska. We want to thank him today. Crazy busy day, multitasking like no other, but he knocked it out of the park. We, of course, want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review, subscribe, give us 5 stars, all of that good stuff. That's going to help us as we try to expand our audience. And of course, go to apenandanapkin.com. Check that out for anything that you might need. It's a bunch of stuff I put on the internet, and hopefully you like it here. So episode number 274 in the books. Want to thank Coach Blackwell for coming on here this week. And we've got some nice things planned here in the future here for a pen and a napkin. So coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.